This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving home. Still not in my car. I am driving the fancy today. It's not Woo! Okay. Get in gear, Phil. It's not the Tesla. It is a regular gas-powered car, but my car is not quite ready, which is a whole story of itself that we'll get into for a minute, and so I needed to rent another car, and as it turned out this past week, interestingly enough, the cheapest car I could rent was a premium. So this is a Audi Q7, rats, driver assistance is still on, and it likes to help you out, which I'm not thrilled with, because as you are driving along, if it determines that, oh, you're too close to that line, it just starts yanking the car back into the center of the lane, which I haven't figured out how to turn that off yet, because I haven't really looked that much. I would prefer that it didn't do that, but you know, that's okay. We can fight with it a little bit. It's not going to hurt anything. So I still don't have my preacher car back. You know, sometimes when people give you estimates, they give you the estimate that they think you want to hear as opposed to what is the real estimate. And there's a whole bunch of that going on, so I'm going to have to call tomorrow and try to get a real estimate. I'm hoping that my car has finally made it into the shop this week. Then maybe I'll stay home next week, work from home, and then, you know, get my car. So originally, when I called this particular transmission place, I said, how long will it take? And he said, oh, about a week. He said, but I won't be able to look at it until next Tuesday. This was like on a Thursday. So I was like, okay, well, that's not too bad. So get it towed down there. He didn't actually get it looked at until that Thursday, which was fine because, you know, that's fine. And then, you know, so he said, yeah, it looks like you're going to need a transmission. Great. How long will that take? Well, take about a week. Okay. So I called him the next week. I think by next week, which was this week, I think we're going to have it in through the door. So, in other words, you had enough cars in front of me that you really couldn't even, you know, get started on it for 3 weeks, which, of course, if I had known that, I probably would have called another transmission shop. But we're hopefully up to the front of the line at this point. We're going to find out tomorrow. And then if we aren't up to the front of the line tomorrow, then we have to make a decision. Determine if we can get a straight answer or if it's going to be another 3 weeks before, you know. So that's okay. We'll work it out. So, of course, I had the Tesla last week, rented a subcompact the week before that. This week, I'm renting the premium car. So it's been interesting to have the comparison between the two, because hands down, the Tesla, from a technology standpoint, is, of course, really amazing. I mean, it's really, really amazing from a technology standpoint. But from a build standpoint, I have to say, maybe the Audi is solid. It's more solid. It just feels more solid. It's interesting. They both have their advantages, obviously, and so it's interesting. Anyway, work is puttering along. We have closed, and we are in the process of getting the start of your stuff going at this point. That all seems to be going fine. Working our way through. We think we know what we need to do. I've already done a couple of deployments of little things that we knew we were going to need. We've got those out of the way. I'm helping as needed with the other stuff. And we came across an application that we were halfway in the process of doing an update for before our main guy left last year and retired. And as it turns out, we've got half of those updates in prod and not on dev, and we've got half of the updates in dev and not on prod. So I spent several hours today just going through stuff and trying to figure out where are we. So I think I've got that all figured out, and I've started kind of resynchronizing things. Really don't want to do too much dinking with production since we are in production with this particular application. We don't want to break anything. That's interesting. So I turned on the heat seater. Maybe you go like this. Nope. I turned on the electric seats and they're quite warm, and I'm trying to figure out how you just turn on one bar of warmthness. I don't know. Anyways, because it's toasty when you put all three on. We'll just turn it off for now. It was a little chilly when I got in the car. So, work is good. Writing is going fine. I'm on track this week. Yay, I'm not too far behind. In fact, I'm right on track for 10,000 words this week, and that seems to be going fine. And you know, had some nice little things happen in the development of the book this week, so the book is good. I think I know what I'm ramping up for. We'll see. I don't think I have the epilogue yet. I have what I think will be the dramatic end, but I don't think I have the epilogue yet. I may have the epilogue. We're just going to wait and see how this pans out. But God is good. All is well. All is well with the writing. Still working along on National Hemp Day. I'm almost to the point. Got just a few more things to do before I might be able to do a try on and adjustment for the waist down. So both legs, you know, and waist. And if that's good, that's actually probably 5/8 of it. And then I have to do torso and arms. But I kind of have established now what I'm doing. So you know, once I get that done, I think it'll go faster. Still have one little engineering challenge to work out, but all in all, I think we're okay. So we'll work tonight a little bit to just finish up those last few pieces and then maybe try on, see how we're doing. Tomorrow is polka dot day, so that's fun. Enjoy Polka Dot Day. It was really interesting today because our new manager, I mentioned Polka Dot Day, and he said, "Oh yeah, I've seen Polka Dot Day." And I was like, "Really? What?" And of course he said, "Sometimes it's confusing because it's hard to remember what I've actually seen and what I've just seen videos of." He said, "But I think I've seen Polka Dot Day." He said, "I think we went to breakfast on Polka Dot Day." So I look back at my calendar, sure enough, yep, it was like January the 21st last year, and it was Polka Dot Day, and he has seen Polka Dot Day. So, getting together with a buddy tomorrow. Don't quite have breakfast plans for Saturday nailed down yet, but, you know, we'll get there. So, I always enjoy Polka Dot Day because, you know, it's a visually arresting costume, and it's cute, and people seem to enjoy it, and so it'll be fun. Look forward to it. Working on another costume simultaneously that I'm not ready to talk about yet. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. We'll just see. I do have most of the pieces in for the National Nude Day costume. And so as soon as I get these two costumes out of the way, the National Hemp Day and the Super Secret, then, you know, we'll move on to the National Nude Day costume, and we'll go from there. But it's fun. It's fun. It's interesting. It's fun, and it's really fascinating. And it's rewarding. It really is rewarding. Last Saturday, I was doing the Blame It on Someone Else Day, which is Brontosaurus Rex. So I'm clomping around in Walmart in a wedding dress and a Tyrannosaurus Rex mask, and one of the newer employees saw me, and I smiled and greeted her, and she said, why do you do this? And so I, you know, told her the story. And she said, well, I look forward to this every week. She said, I'm always thinking, what's Phil going to wear this week? I said, well, good, I'm glad. She said, yeah. She said, this just makes my week. So, you know, and that's lovely. That is just lovely. It's lovely to be able to have conversations with people I had decided that I wouldn't be able to have conversations with once I kind of worked through the systems analyst of gender relationships. And I had to abandon for a while even talking with women who were between the ages of 16 and 35 as far as a cold open went. And it's just lovely to have a mechanism now where they will come talk to me, and then we can have a nice little conversation, and I can do something for them, be a part of their week that they enjoy. And it's lovely. It's just flat lovely. So, that's good. And there's one piece of it that I don't quite have yet. That's a really intriguing piece to me. So last year, for April Fools, I did what I came to call Phil Foolery, as opposed to April Fools. It was Phil Foolery, spelled with a PH. And I put up the video, and, you know, I had several encounters with people, and a good time was had by all because they didn't know it was me, and that it was laughing and joking and carrying on. One particular individual had no idea it was me. I mean, just completely no idea. I usually take a picture with her every week. And then, of course, when she found out it was me, there was laughing, and it was great. We took a picture together, and I distinctly remember we usually, you know, wrap arms around each other when we take a picture and, you know, stand close, etc. But this time she pulled in, you know, a lot closer. And I had draped my arm over her shoulder, and she grabbed my hand and just held on to it. And you could tell that she just thoroughly enjoyed the April Fool's costume. Just really enjoyed it. You know, it had made a mark in her week. So that was interesting. I noted the difference, even though we've been friends for years now. There was another young lady, was one of the first ones I really got a reaction out of. And ever since then, you know, often people will feel the need to tell me whether it's their favorite costume or not. And some of that, what is their favorite costume, moves around. It's not necessarily a slam dunk. But for this particular young lady, the April Fool's costume has been her favorite, hands down. Whenever we're talking about costumes, she'll always say something like, well, of course, this isn't my favorite. She'll say, you know which one's my favorite. I said, I do know which one's your favorite, which is the April Fool's costume. And she said something this last Friday that I just found really fascinating. She said, yeah, she said, I love that costume, referring to the April Fool's costume. She said, I think about that costume every day. Now, I'm not sure if she really meant every day or just frequently, but there is something about that costume. There's something about my presentation in that costume that still resonates with her 10 months later, 9 months later. And it brings a smile to her face. And that's a privilege. That's really a privilege to know that something I have done has brought someone such joy that they're able to draw from that joy 9 months later. So, interesting stuff. It's very, very interesting. And I'm just so grateful that I stumbled into this and it has become such an amazing thing in my life to allow me to bring kindness and joy to others. It's good. It's really, really good. So, having said all that, and I will have to wrap this up as soon as I get home. We have small groups coming back to our house today. This Thursday, we have been off for all of Christmas. We were supposed to have small groups last Thursday, but half of our group was in Israel. One of our group had broken her shoulder. The other ones weren't coming because it was so cold and dark, and it was down to just, I think, us and another couple. And we just went, you know what? Let's just cancel this week. We'll get started again on the 19th. So it is January the 19th, 2023. I'm driving home a little early because I got started a little early. So it's 3:37 at this point. And I'm going to run home, help my wife get the final things ready for tonight. She just had some shots in her back and in her neck. This was the first round of shots that are called PRP, which is protein something plasma. And it's supposed to help the ligaments in her back and neck heal themselves up. It wasn't covered by Medicare, but we did some research and there was just certainly a lot of mentions in it. And so, you know what? If this helps, this makes sense. So anyways, I've got to do that when I get home and be helpful. Okay, so today, not long, but just emphasizing again in different terms what I have known for a long time and now I see made manifested over and over. The whole Windfall series, which I've been working on for years, has as an underlying principle that every entity, once it becomes aware of its existence, has a first principle that eclipses all others. How do I continue to exist? So, what we see by that is that survival trumps everything else normally. If you have an organization and it has formed up, the most important thing for that organization is to continue to exist. And so it may proclaim certain highbrow motives and goals and ambitions and visions, but if you threaten its existence or if it feels its existence is threatened, you can pretty well guarantee that all those things go out the window and it just does what it needs to survive. This is a core difference in what we see in Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ lays down his life. And he lays down his life for us whom he calls friends, which is an astonishing thing. That's really an astonishing thing. So having that as a core principle for the book, and it's something I truly believe, then you can pretty much count on the fact that anytime you have an organization that grows to a certain size, that no matter what that organization purports in terms of its vision and its philosophy and its quote-unquote morality, you can guess that that organization, that system, that entity is going to do what it has to do to survive. And will do what it needs to do to grow and to get bigger and take more control. I've often said that I get really amused that Google's first vision statement was, "Don't be evil." Because that quickly went out the window once Google started making money off advertising and needed to grow its advertising to make it as big as possible. It was more than happy to take on tactics that are better attributed to the smarmiest used car salesman that you can think of. And I had mentioned several weeks ago that one of the individuals that I have heard talk about COVID and COVID-19 and vaccines explains what we have seen in terms of the vaccination programs as a simple fact that organizations, when they grow large enough, develop into psychopathy. The organization becomes a psychopath because all it cares about is its own survival and how to gain more control and how to gain more power. And it really doesn't care about the people that it's supposedly helping or customers, all that customer care focus. You know, if it helps the company continue its brand and grow bigger, sure. But if it comes down to the company having to sustain loss and keep doing something that they're doing, no. And it just seemed like this week there were several things in a row that went bam, 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 bam. And it's like, oh yeah, psychopathy. And since I don't have that much more time, I'll just run down them real quickly. The beeping is because it feels like I'm too close to something. It's going to beep when I pull into the garage as well. Yes, I know. So I'm just going to grab my mail here real quick, and then we'll pull into the garage and talk about psychopathic companies a little bit. And then we'll be done for the day. So I was watching a series of TED Talks and YouTube videos, and I came across Cheryl Atkinson, I think was her name. She was a CBS reporter, and the liberal press described her as, well, the right wing lost its one reporter at CBS when she resigned from CBS. So, I mean, I don't know that she's necessarily a right-wing reporter so much as she has reports on things that people don't normally report on. So, for instance, she did a TED Talk on astroturfing. And astroturfing, in her parlance, is the practice of large corporations. Yes, see, it's very upset. I know you're upset. I know there are things that are close. It's mad. I know, it's okay. This car is so big, I have to get it all the way into the garage. Anyways, astroturfing. So she described astroturfing, and she documented in her talk how companies will go out and they'll create these fake organizations that are supposedly grassroots organizations, And then they will take out all these social media accounts, and then they will post all these things to make it look like there's a bunch of people associated with it, and they're all posting, and, you know, this is something that a lot of people are behind, when in fact, it's just a propaganda arm. Because psychopathy. She also did a report, and I got tickled with this, on fake news. And she said, you know, that's this, and this was during the, I think this was during the 2016 campaign. And she was saying how that people had attributed fake news to pretty much one person, which of course is Donald Trump. She said, but what they don't realize is fake news was actually, who did she say that was started by? I think it was started, the idea was first attributed to somebody on the left because they were going to use it as a slur, I guess, against the right. And then Donald Trump just took the term and ran with it. He just used it so much that he completely eclipsed their use of it, because he was using it all the time, to the point that then whoever started it had to come out and say, yeah, well, you know, that term's just been overdone now. We're not going to use that term anymore. Which I think is hysterical. I just think it's hysterical. But in addition to that, you know, we've got things like when the Hunter Biden laptop came out, there were 50, 60 some odd people that signed the letter that said, well, this is obviously Russian disinformation. Well, now, 2 years later, going on 2.5 years later, what happens? Well, one of them that signed the letter came out and said, well, we knew. Yeah, we knew that most of it that was there was true. Because it has to be true if you're going to run a disinformation thing. Oh, okay. Psychopathy, because intelligence agencies, they want to survive. And how they survive is with control and with information and determining who is put in what places of power. Psychopathy. The other thing I heard this week was there is a medical doctor called Brzezinski that apparently 40 years ago found a treatment that is effective against cancer. The really, really bad kinds of cancers. And it all comes down to, I think it's these peptides that he noticed that people who had cancer were low in these peptides. And so he thought, wonder what would happen if I gave people this peptide. And so he researched, he found out that in Texas, if he developed his own substances, he could, as a medical doctor, prescribe them to his patients. So he started developing this peptide, which is, it's safe. Everybody agrees that it's safe. It won't hurt you because it's just something that your body normally makes. And he started administering this to patients who had really, really bad forms of cancer, like brain tumors and things that medical science just didn't have an answer for. And I mean, interesting stories and horrific stories about like 6-month-old baby that has a brain tumor and standard medicine is to just go ahead and shoot this poor baby up with chemicals and chemotherapy and burn its skull with radiation, trying to get this tumor killed off, being unsuccessful, having the doctors shrug their shoulders and say, well, there's nothing else we can do. And then having parents take this child to see Dr. Brzezinski, and they put them on this regimen, and then the tumor starts shrinking. And supposedly he has lots and lots and lots of case studies like this, where just taking this, I think it's a peptide, taking this peptide solves the problem. The tumors shrink, the tumors go into remission, people are healthy. Well, this just wasn't cutting it, apparently, for the Texas Medical Board, because something like 6 or 7 times they brought injunctions against him to get him to stop giving this to people. And he had already done his research and determined that as long as he didn't prescribe it for people outside the state of Texas, that it was fine. that the FDA wouldn't get involved and no one would stop him. And so I think with 6 or 7 injunctions, they go to court. You know, they're trying to smear his name. He brings out all his case files. The judge looks at all and throws it out. Says he's helping people. What's wrong with you people? Well, as it turns out later, supposedly, it is determined that, in fact, the FDA has been leaning on Texas Medical Board to go after him. Because at the time, the medical commissioner or the commissioner of the FDA had said flat out, we will not accept medical treatments that are developed by individuals. We have to have medical treatments that are developed by major companies that will do all the proper testing, you know, or major companies that we want to make a lot of money. So, psychopathy. Because whenever you get a bunch of humans together, the flesh starts rising up, and money is the root of all evil. And what you end up with is these corporations behaving like psychopaths. That's not to say that everybody in these organizations is a psychopath. There are a lot of good people and a lot of organizations that are psychotic. That exhibit psychopathy. Lots of good people, but the crush of the organization, the crush of the need to move forward and gain more market share and gain more dominance and more power, that crush drives these companies into behavior that treats individuals just like data points, and that's all. It's an interesting thing, but God is good. Jesus is kind to us. We're moving forward. It's going to be a great weekend. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.